As always, this episode of the Talking Wolves podcast is brought to you by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Why not make Green King your go-to destination for this season's final stretch? With delicious food and refreshing beverages, every single one of Wolves' televised fixtures is on show at their venues. And with 900 sport venues across the UK, there's a chance there's one just walking distance from where you are. And watching football is way better with your friends and family. So why not get the squad together for some title showdowns, the race for European qualification, and nail-biting relegation six-pointers. So don't forget to download the Green King Sport app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on.
Hello and welcome back to the Talking Wolf podcast. I am your host, Matt Cooper, and today I'm delighted to say I'm joined by the main man himself, Dave Azzopardi. Just Dave today, but nonetheless, how are you keeping, son?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Still a little bit tired from the weekend, which I'm sure we'll touch on in a sec. But yeah, other than that, okay. Not too bad.
That's good, mate. What did you get up to at the weekend? I can't believe you actually went to the game. You're on a UK stag do in Birmingham, and then your next story is you singing Mateus Cunha's on your mind.
I know. I don't, mate.
How do you manage this?
I honestly, I've never. It's probably not an appropriate story for the podcast. But I don't think I've ever been this drunk in my life, for a start. So, I mean, the last couple of weeks, I've felt like a bit low and stuff. And I thought, you know what, this weekend, it's going to be a really good weekend. Looking forward to it. So, yeah, my friend's getting married. He's going on a proper stag do in Budapest next month. But he says he wanted like a UK get together, mainly for the lads that, you know, weren't cool enough to be invited to Budapest. But also, so everyone can meet each other beforehand. So, we started in Birmingham Jewellery Quarter because it was the beer festival over there. And then by about 4 o'clock, I was like, because I'm not big on beer recently. I'm more like on the spirits and stuff. The beer had knocked me about. So another lad that was going to come to the game with me, I think about 5 o'clock, he was like, should we go now? So we got on the train. We made it to Smevic from Jewellery Quarter. And he goes, right, I'm going to go to Gornal now. I'll leave you to go to Wolves on your own. I was there like, because he didn't want to go to the game. He goes, I'm not going to go to the game. I'm just going to go to Gornal. So he left me on my own. So I'm train full of people. You know, when your jaw starts to tighten up, and you're like, I'm going to be sick here. I thought, I can't. In front of all these people, I can't. Right. Got off the train and rang my brother straight away in Wolves. I said, where are you? And he was like, I'm by the subway. I said, mate, wait there, because otherwise I will not get into this ground. So I'm there walking to Molyneux, my Jewellery Quarter free T-shirt from the beer festival in one hand. Get in, and then my brother sorts me out with a water and a pie, and then ended up staying out till 4:30 in the morning afterwards as well.
You definitely got second wind then.
Oh, mate, yeah, but I had 4 messages off people saying, are you all right? Like, people that are sitting next to it at the match, I must have been out of it. Like, and saying some all sorts. I've messaged about 4 people saying, what have I didn't say anything inappropriate to anyone, have I? Or I've checked all my Insta DMs to make sure I'm not messaging Alessia Russo asking if she's up or anything like that, you know?
Well, at 7:30 p.m.
Yeah, you up, yeah. So, yeah, it was a bit of a mess, but, you know, we live and we learn. And then I was up for the Wolves women game yesterday, which was an unbelievable game of football, by the way. So, yeah.
Mental. Jesus, mate. You got to be careful. You got a reputation to uphold. You're not a nobody anymore. You're a somebody. Yes. And it takes one video of Dave Azzopardi chundering on the train from the
Mate, it was full as well. Someone sat next to me and I was like, oh, please. If ever a time to throw up, it's not now. But yeah, I somehow made it off. I'm sure I was pissed off with myself because I bought a train ticket as well whilst you're on the train. And then I went into Wolves and the barriers were open. I was like, oh, £3 down the drain. There's a pint gone. But nah.
But you had to be fair, mate. Probably did you a favour.
In fact, I checked my bank statement. Thankfully, it wasn't too bad. So we live and we learn.
You know what, though? Proper fan, better than me, for going to the stag and actually making it to the game, despite being in Brum and being pretty shit face. So, you know what, fair play. I didn't make it.
You were saying just before as well, like I did the match review, genuinely don't remember what I'd said. And so I watched it back yesterday. Thankfully, like you said, it wasn't too bad. So I must have remembered part of it.
We were speaking when Gary O'Neill did his press conference on Friday. I was already a bit like about going to the game. I don't know, mate. I know I've said it a few times on here, but I just genuinely feel like quite detached from it, and it's nothing really that like Wolves are doing, or the team, or whatnot. Like, just football as a spectacle. Like, I know people say about, oh, VAR's ruined the game, and I'll never go again. But genuinely, mate, like, it's just crap. Like football is just not what it used to be for me. Even like it, when you score a goal, like, you don't celebrate. From the fear of making yourself look at the back when it's ruled out.
The Coventry one was bad, wasn't it, yesterday?
Yeah, even watching that as well, like, I was like, oh my God, they've done it. I said to the missus, and I was like, they've disallowed it. I was just like, this is just crap. And perhaps the right decision was made, but I don't know. It's just, I think if we were still fighting for things on all cylinders, a bit of a fair weather fan, then I'd be like, I can't miss it. But the fact that the season's over through one reason or the other, injuries and whatnot, I don't know. I won't particularly bothered about going. I'm quite busy at the minute. I haven't really had a chance to see my friends and family either. So I decided that I'd go and watch it in the pub with them, which is nice. I still enjoyed it.
Changer.
It was. Good to see. But I ain't seen people for like 2 or 3 weeks. But yeah, it was gave my tickets to 2 people who would really wanted to go as well. Both Arsenal fans, made about 100 quid now. All the family members are Wolves fans, but yeah, it was a nice change. Similar to you, Dave. From the second half, I don't really remember like lots. I've not really been drinking that much. But Saturday, I thought, yeah, I'm gonna have a few. I ordered a couple of bottles of wine as well. I don't even drink wine. You know, we know that I want a couple of bottles of Malbec. It's part of our grown up, mate. Part of maturing. But the game, Dave, I know you were telling me earlier, like, you don't remember loads, which is fine, because we're trying to get Jord on, but Jord's a bit busy at the minute with work as well, so Jord was probably the most sensible suggestion to get on, because he probably remembers more than Dave and I put together. I felt, watching it, mate, I felt proud of the performance I put in, considering the circumstances, like, 4 central midfielders on the pitch against although they've faltered in recent weeks in Arsenal, a very, very good side. Felt proud, like, yeah, you know what, that's what Wolves is all about. And I woke up Sunday morning, I thought, you know what, fuck feeling proud. We should be, you know, we should expect more from the club, not from the players. But, you know, with 7 or 8 games left of the season, we shouldn't just be thinking, oh, you know, well, we've done all right this season. I just felt like, I don't know, like, we're not making enough of more, but more, that more should be done, personally. We knew this. Unfortunately, we could forecast in January that this was going to come with the injuries, and O'Neill did as well. I don't know. It's just, that's why I feel like I can't be arsed.
No, I know what you mean. I think when we had the news from the press conference on Friday, I think a few of us were expecting a good hiding of maybe 4 or 5 goals. But the fact that we've gone out there and, you know, could have easily gone 1-0 up. I mean, João Gomes hits the post at 0-0 after a decent stop from Raya. You think, hold on, we've got a chance here. But I think even with the, you know, we held Arsenal quite well. But I think you're right. I think we shouldn't be in this situation. We shouldn't be in a situation where you've only got 10 fully fit outfield players, to be honest. So if Fosun don't get it right this summer, or like in the next couple of transfer windows, I don't know what to say, because I've had these warning signs the day we came up into the Premier League. You know, there would be, we sort of rode our luck on Jimenez from many years as our sole number 9, really. And, you know, in the end, he got the injury and sort of had to gamble on a couple of people, Fabio Silva included. And now it's sort of happened all across the pitch. So they've got to wake up, really. But yeah, like I said, I think everyone had every right to be proud of the performance. I think we went in there, you know, you look at the bench, 15-year-old on the bench, a couple of academy players that haven't played first team football before. So yeah, they're proud, but also a bit of a wake-up call for the board, I think, ahead of the next couple of transfer windows.
Yeah, agreed. And I mean, you look at the stats and you probably think, bloody hell, Arsenal transfer. But it definitely didn't feel like that. I thought up until the Arsenal goal, we're probably the better side. I feel there's an element of fortune as well with a Trossard goal. It's a slice.
Yeah,
I think he's trying to direct it goalwards, but I don't think he's trying to do that. But I thought first half, mate, the way that Wolf set up, and probably defensively the best we've been in recent weeks. Because I think if there's been a criticism of Wolves over the past month or so, it's been sloppiness in defence.
Yeah.
But I just, yeah, like I said, like really, really proud of the performance. And, you know, I think Wolves fans are a simple bunch in more ways than one. But in terms of what we expect, it's just, you know, the minimum requirement is to just work your bollocks off. And that's exactly what all of them did. So there's no, you know, no criticism there. I think if we'd have had some more senior attacking players on the pitch who are used to playing the role, like João Gomes playing like right wing, Chiraya was obviously 21 and not that experienced, but I think in build up we were great, but it was just that final third that we were really lacking something. And I feel like, you know, on a day, if you've got two or three players back, then you could get something against Arsenal, because they weren't great.
Yeah, I think the beauty of Wolves, especially under Gary O'Neill, 90% of the time we look very well coached in terms of how we play football. We've got an obvious sort of plan in terms of how to build up and so on. And I think you're right. I think even in, you know, quite good to see Juan get a decent amount of minutes. But even with Acuna, you know, a bit more pace in there, Neto in there, I think you have a bit of a better go there. But I was happy with the fact that, you know, a couple of the lads that haven't had a huge amount of minutes this season, and you would class as fringe players, had started on Saturday and actually made a pretty good account of themselves. I think Boubacar had a really good game. Tawanda as well, because he's been having sort of snippets here and there, and, you know, coming off the bench for stoppage time or last 5-10 minutes of matches. We've not really seen the best out of Tawanda Traore, and there's been times where he's lost the ball or his turn of pace hasn't been brilliant. But I think putting him on the pitch on the first whistle showed a bit more what he was about. I think technically a very decent young footballer as well, and, you know, created some of the moves and was involved quite a lot with decent passages of play. So, yeah, I mean, there were good elements of the game. Obviously, it's never nice to lose a match, but the fact that we remained fairly competitive and still wanted as best as we could to have a go at Arsenal, I think Gary O'Neill could be proud of that.
Mm. He said it was one of his favourite performances of the season, despite the result, and I do get that. I thought Chiraya himself did well as well. Like you said, whenever he's come on, it's almost been in difficult circumstances, and hasn't looked great. But when you either chasing the game or seeing the game out, but to see him from the start, he showed some good touches, mate, and some levels of kind of maturity, like when to hold onto the ball, when to release it.
Yeah.
I thought he did really well. But Boubacar for me is probably, as you said, the standout. Probably not having a pre-season, or because he was injured at the start of the season, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Has probably hindered his chances somewhat of getting into the team this season. Also, the form of Gomez, Lamina, and Doyle as well hasn't helped. But I thought he was excellent, and he gave us a bit of a driving force in the midfield, because I think that's what we needed. It was a distinct lack of pace in that team. If anyone was going to go forward, it was him.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was good. You know, he's a young lad that, you know, there was obviously a plan. I was talking about Tawanda there, but yeah, with Boubacar, even Boubacar, still quite, you know, young player. He's had international football. International football a little bit with Mali under 23s this year, and he's had to be very, very patient. And this is what you need from players when they're not really getting the game time. You know, when you're sort of put on the stage, make sure you perform and see what you can do. And that's, you know, you've done that. And I'm sure there'll be people asking questions now whether he deserves some more minutes or even deserves to start, you know, with the next two games coming up in quite quick succession, both at Molineux. I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of him going forward. The one thing, and I'm not sure if you're going to bring this up, the one thing I wish we saw, although at 1-0, I suppose you're in the game, and obviously Ødegaard scored right at the death, I would have liked to have seen Okudua come on. And I know there's still plenty of time left for that to happen between now and the end of the season. But I think when it's such a difficult circumstances, if you bring him on, one, it's a bit of a message to the board. Look, I'm bringing a 15-year-old kid on. But two, to break some serious records, and, you know, to do that whilst you're in a difficult moment as a club, I think would have been nice for everyone, really.
Have you seen him play?
I have, yeah. I watched him most recently in the under-17s last week.
Was he any good?
He's all right. He's quite well built for a lad of that age, to be fair. It would have been interesting. Obviously, playing under-17s or under-18s football compared to Champions League wingers is a bit of a different task. But he's not awful. He's a good footballer. Bright future, I'd say.
Do you not think it's a bit... you know, when we get these records on youngest ever player to play, like,
yeah,
I don't think it brings on like unnecessary pressure.
If he
comes on and drops a shitter, then people are gonna, and we've seen it already this season, it's almost putting unnecessary pressure on. I don't think the club are probably particularly asked about breaking records either, or Gary O'Neill. So I don't mind that. It's probably great that he's getting the experience of being in and around the first team on a match day, but yeah, I just think it brings unnecessary pressure. I mean, some players might buckle under it, some players might relish it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I just look at the rest of the bench as well. I mean, it's full of, I'm not even lying, there were a couple of those people on that bench that were out like on Saturday night. I'm just clocking some of the names there. So I'm not going to say who. But, I think Gary O'Neill was desperate to have a couple of digs in the, well, not digs as such, but basically sending a bit more of a message to the board in the pre-match press conference. And he pretty much...
Even in the post-match, he said about Nina, saying, like, I'm sure you played up there as a kid, go and have a go. It's this is like Sunday league stuff.
Yeah. So, considering the circumstances, they've done okay.
That's why I felt proud, but then I hear stuff like that, and it's just amateur hour, isn't it? Not from O'Neill, but just from like the whole management of the situation of just not having enough players. But I think we've been unfortunate in the fact that four out of our five attackers have all been out. Like, teams have had injuries, and like, I've had a centre half out and a centre mid like, but it's literally like decimated that whole area of the pitch. But you know, he was calling for more players, so yeah, I woke up Sunday reflecting and felt a little bit pissed off. Just on the Trossard goal, do you think that, personally, I think Doc should be stronger there against Jesus. I think it's pretty lightweight that he gets bullied with the ball coming in.
Yeah, I think, I think my brother afterwards was saying like he wouldn't have been surprised to see a foul given, but I think it's one of those, bit of a grey area with the referee. You know, if he gives a foul whilst Trossard hits the ball into the back of the net, VAR will probably stick with the decision. But like you said earlier, I think it was a slice of fortune by Trossard. But it's one of those. We've had him a few times this season where I think a player needs to be a bit stronger. And but unfortunately, it's one of those.
I saw, excuse me, I saw a lot of people, sorry, a lot of people, a small number of people saying Tommy Doyle was poor in terms of a lot of misplaced passes, but his role essentially was to play as a quarterback and take risk with those passes in behind. You're not going to hit 100% of your passes in behind successfully, especially when you've got someone else to run on to the end of it. So I think his role within the team from O'Neill would be, look, you've got a great range of passing, just take risks. And with that, then you are going to have misplaced passes. He's not as good as Neves on the ball in terms of spraying passes about. He's not far off, but that's going to happen, so...
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, you'll get that with that role. Yeah, you'll get that with that role. I think, you know, the fact that we played Arsenal twice this season and made a... Bearing in mind how bad we were in the first sort of half against Arsenal at the Emirates and considering our circumstances this weekend. You know, and I think in that first game we were without Lamina and Doyle. Lamina and João Gomes in the middle because Boubacar and Doyle both started at the Emirates. And then you put the squad there. The fact that we've been fairly competitive in both of those games, I think shows how, like going back to what I said earlier, how well coached we are. So, I don't know. I mean, look, we've got a very tough end to the season. We've got two games coming up now, which could be winnable. But we've still got City and Liverpool to play. It wouldn't surprise me if we cause an upset in one of those games, you know. It wouldn't.
I think it'll be, I mean, on the last day of the season, I think it'll be all wrapped up anyway, to be honest.
Hopefully.
But then you've got you've got a battle with Klopp's last game, haven't you? So it's almost like an unmovable force, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
But what else was I going to say? I was going to say something else, but it has escaped me. Oh, well. That was it. Under Lopetegui last season, last game of the season against Arsenal, I look at the team. Someone put it on Twitter, I can't remember who. The team we put out and the depth we had compared to this season, we still got spanked 5-0.
Yeah.
I think it shows the fight that's been instilled in this kind of siege mentality from O'Neill. Which is promising. But can't fault the lads at all, mate. Proud of the performance, not happy with the circumstances. So Just before we move on to the Bournemouth game, because it's two games this week, mate. So by the time this podcast comes out, we've probably only got a shelf life of 12 hours. So enjoy it while you can. I just want to get your thoughts on the tweet from Nottingham Forest, because I've seen a lot of Wolves fans being roped into this. So for those who haven't seen it, basically that Nottingham Forest are in one way or the other insinuated that the VAR official, being a Luton fan, was a conflict of interest against in the Forest Everton game. Especially when you saw the penalty decisions that they weren't given. I think at least one's a penalty personally. I think they can feel a little bit hard done by. But what's your thoughts on it, Dave? Apparently Marinakis was behind it rather than the media team.
Yeah.
They've got to be slapped with a massive fine, haven't they, for that?
I think, like, looking from their point of view, I've watched the game and I watched the highlights. I think they're very, very unlucky not to have got at least one of those. Ridiculous that they haven't got some of those decisions. But that is embarrassing, that tweet. Like, purely, absolute embarrassment, that is. Like, I know Forest fans will try their best to defend it, but if Wolves would put that out or a tweet like that, I'd be like, oh, my God, like, we're actually...
Well, I even said it was embarrassing when Jeff Shee put that statement out. I know you didn't think that, but I thought it was.
I think the thing with the Jeff Shee one was that Wolves at least did it in... what I would call a professional manner, like as an official statement on the website. But that tweet that they put out there, like, and then blaming the referee as a Luton, the VAR for being a Luton fan, and then it's come out today, I think you posted earlier, that apparently they didn't even complain to the FA about that. So I just think it's embarrassing, personally, absolutely embarrassing. And I out of any team in this Premier League, I want them to go down.
Same.
I really do.
I don't think they will, though. I think it's the bottom three is the bottom three. Saying that, Burnley, we spoke about it a few weeks ago. Like, they're putting up a bit of a fight, aren't they? So,
yeah, I looked at the table the other day, and they're quite close now. Well, I say close, they've got a bit of work to do. Yeah.
I'd quite like Forest to go down. But even with the Jeff Shee statement, mate, I just thought, we've not heard of you for ages. You're literally putting your statement out personally, thinking from a devil's advocate point of view, just to get fans back on side a little bit with you, to say, like, I'm kind of with you. But we've not heard of you from, you know, where were you in January when we needed backing? And all of them. So that was my point of view. I did do the podcast after he released that statement, but that was more 10 pence worth. But they've got to be slapped with a fine for that, because they've not said that it's cheating or, you know, but it may as well have, surely. Like, we all know what you're getting at.
Literally calling it, like, corruption. Like, because it's so, mental tweet. Genuinely embarrassing from a Premier League club.
That it is a nuclear take from a Premier League official Twitter account.
And then the worst is that Clattenburg's got involved. Obviously, he's on the payroll at the club, and then he's done an article moaning about it as well.
Yeah, we've done an exclusive with the Mail, didn't they, I think?
Yeah, I've not read it, but...
I don't think he disclosed in the article that he works for Forest. Obviously, everyone knows he does, but I think that's probably important context for the article when he's going in. But to be honest, mate, the decisions yesterday for them were poor, were really poor. So I get it, but I get why they feel aggrieved, but you can't be going around tweeting stuff like that. Some Wolves fans will probably, and I've seen it already, will probably say, no, I agree with them, fuck the PGMOL, but... You've got to be very, very careful when you're insinuating that there's genuine corruption rather than I'd like to think it's incompetence. But yeah, what would happen if Nottingham Forest had a striker who was a lifelong Everton fan? Would they not start him against Everton because of conflict of interest?
Yeah, I know. I get the referee thing to a degree, but that's just like the Anthony Taylor from Greater Manchester could have given any of those decisions, and he was the main referee on the pitch, and he didn't. So
it does kind of reek of focusing on me and the kids from now on. Don't all these snakes out there going to live life with me and my Caden? Fuck the rest of you. It was very, very, very akin to that. But anyway, mate, let's move on. Oh, before we talk of the decisions, the, I don't know if you've seen it, the Kilman tackle. Some people are saying it's a red card. I don't think it is, because his foot's not really off the ground. It's late, but for me, it's a yellow card.
I saw a still of it, but I don't remember it.
It was late, but it wasn't over ankle high. It's almost like across the floor.
That's very harsh. And the fact that he stood up as well, I think. Yeah. Like, if he's gone diving in for that, I think, yeah. But I can only find stills here, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's actually posted a video of it.
Not a red card for me. But
no.
Anyway, moving on to Bournemouth on Wednesday. Bournemouth have come into quite a good bit of form, haven't they, recently, under Iraola, finding the feet. I know they've not won their last three, but before that, it felt like they were winning every week. Do you think that the decision not to include Aitnori, Lamina, Sarabia from the start, I know Aitnori is carrying a bit of a knock, is with one eye on this game on Wednesday?
Yeah, probably I would say so. I think this on paper, if Gary O'Neill knows that extra few days rest or limiting the minutes of those players against Arsenal will help. I think if we win, if I quickly grab the Premier League table up, I think if we win, you get a bit more of a breathing space on Bournemouth. And look, it's not going to decide who gets, you know, European football or whatever, but it will certainly help us, you know, secure sort of 10th, 11th place in the league. So, yeah, sat in 11th at the minute, 43, Bournemouth on 42. So, I think the lowest we can finish, really, I mean, mathematically, it's a bit lower, but lowest we can finish is 13th, which I think, considering the circumstances at the start of the season, would still be a nice finish. But sort of going back to what you mentioned earlier, I think, considering we're so close to maybe competing with 7th, 8th place, if we finish 13th and ended up dropping points between the Coventry FA Cup game to the end of the season, I think that's frustrating, because it doesn't feels like we haven't won in a while, to be honest. So,
when was the last time we won a game?
Was it Fulham?
Not won in the last five in the Prem. I can tell you that.
Fulham it was, yeah, Fulham. 2-1. Even then, it was a bit of a nightmare with it. So, yeah, I think if resting the players pays off, get a bit of breathing space on Bournemouth. And then hopefully, I ain't too bad. Obviously, I want to win on Saturday against Luton, but if we lose and it puts a bit more pressure on the Forest, then so be it. I think actually this week, like Bournemouth and Luton, they're my last games of the season, because I'm away for the Palace game at home. I'm not sure if I'm going to do City and Liverpool away. So this week could be my last in-person game. So I'm hoping positive week.
Make sure you let people at Wolves know so they can do the lap of honour for you, mate.
Yeah, cheers, buddy. Yeah. If they can do it at Luton, because I'm going to miss the Palace one, then that'd be brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have a word to what they can do.
Yeah, cheers.
I think I'll do Liverpool away, actually. I do like going up to Liverpool. I know it's the last day of the season. It's a Sunday, though, isn't it?
Yeah, Sunday 4 o'clock as well. Horrible, yeah. I got done by a speeding ticket there. On the last day, I got done by a speeding ticket there. I've been paranoid ever since.
Have you? Is that as you M54 going into Liverpool?
It was just some like normal street. I was doing 36 in a 30. So on paper, yes, I am speeding, obviously. But I had to do a speed awareness course. So
did you have to attend or did you do it virtually?
Yeah, it was before COVID, this was.
Oh,
I enjoyed it, I actually enjoyed it.
Don't they show you, like, I've never done one, I've never actually been caught speeding, touchwood, or anything like that, but don't they not show you like stuff around like car accidents now, like graphic they are or not?
Not really. It's just like a lot of it's like just basic road, and they'll show you pictures of like different roads. They're like, yeah, what's the speed limit there? And you got to basically guess the speed limit, and then they'll then explain why you're right or wrong. It's just dead basic stuff, really.
Sounds good. Good luck. Anyway, where were we? Bournemouth, resting players. Do you think there's a chance that Cunha might play? I know he was in the box with Ben Whittaker. Them two are like best mates now, aren't they? Do you think there's a? I know that O'Neill said it's a bit of a rare injury, but he could be back into contention for Wednesday. What do you reckon?
I think if he's on the bench, and great. But I think if he's still not 100% sure, there's no point in risking him. No point in risking it and aggravating the injury. So I don't know, as long as it's a much stronger squad than what we saw on Saturday, which I'm sure it will be, get some of the other lads back. Not too sure. Maybe Semedo might be back, I'm not sure. If not, maybe Saturday. So I know we'll know a lot more. I'm just hoping it's a much more positive press conference from Gary O'Neill on Tuesday. It was funny. The fact that he said the good news is that Ryan Aitnori might be in the squad. That was on Friday. He goes, you can imagine how bad the bad news is.
I know. He was quite upbeat about it, though. I don't think he gives a fuck anymore.
Yeah.
I think he knows the pressure's off him for the results and performances just because of the circumstances. So it'd be good to... I think with Semedo, it was just in the red zone, wasn't he? There was a risk of... through his calf. So you think Semedo could be back. You think Wang will probably give you another 45 minutes, maybe a little bit longer. Sarabia from the start.
Wang got about 50. They get back 50 in the end, Wang.
Yeah, 50 minutes. Lamina will probably be back in there. Obviously, I think João Gomes might be due a bit of a rest. But with all that considering, it does look a lot stronger going into the game against Bournemouth on Wednesday, who are a good side. Spent a fair bit of money as well. Spent like 125 million, I think, in the summer, didn't they? Or the last couple of summers, as did we in January when we needed to. But they've got quite a few informed players. Solanke, I like Semenyo as well, the winger from Bristol City, who was from Bristol City. I liked him when he was at Bristol. I know when we had my mate on, who was a Bristol fan, when we signed Dan Bentley and we're talking about Alex Scott, he said that Semenyo was like really good as well, like really good player, like watch out for him. And seems to be adapting to the Premier League now. But with the Luton game on Saturday as well, Dave, probably two different kind of tests that O'Neill's anticipating, but quite close together. Do you think he may prioritise the one fixture and go as strong as he possibly can and then have more rotation in the other? Or do you think it could be quite mixed?
I think it'd be a bit mixed bag. Ultimately, he'll want to win football matches. He's not going to be bothered if Luton beat us and sends Forest down. Gary O'Neill's job is to win football matches ultimately. So he'll want to win both games. So he'll have to review the situation, and I'm sure there might be limited minutes. It's a bit different. Obviously, we've got five substitutions, and we very rarely use all five, to be honest. So I think if one or two more first teamers are back and can give us limited minutes on Wednesday, he'll probably try and rotate a little bit more, maybe slightly earlier in the game, and that will keep some players fresher for Saturday. So I think it'll be a bit of a mix. They're both winnable games for me. As good as Bournemouth have been recently and as competitive as Luton have been this season, I think really on paper, both at Molineux, we should win both games.
I know we have a bit of a running joke in our group chat about Rob Edwards and manager of the season contender, because everyone, perhaps it's just me being pissing like a bit of an arse about it, but everyone has him as like manager of the year contender, and I'm always like, he's in the bottom three. Like, how if he keeps him up, I get it, but if he doesn't keep him up, how can people have him as a manager of the year contender? I get that they're on a shoestring budget and they've competed a lot better than other people think, but.
I don't think he's a manager of the year. I think you could definitely appreciate the job he's done, because I think when Luton came up with what tools they had, I think everyone had him pretty much dead and buried from game week one. So the fact that they're still in the conversation to maybe stay up is a great achievement. But I do hope we could get something from both of these games this week, to be honest.
I think the Bournemouth game will be a tougher test. They do knock it about nice as well, don't they? But I'm just hoping we can get a couple, like you said, Dave, just a couple more wins or so before now and the end of the season. Because although the situation's different to last season and the season before, we've seen what it's like when it feels like the last couple of seasons we've lost like 7 on the bounce to finish the season. Mm. And fans are down in the doldrums. It's shit. You can't be arsed for next season. If Wolves go and win 2 or 3 games before the end of the season, season ticket prices are frozen. You know, Wolves fans are optimistic for the new season under O'Neill if he stays. But I think if we then lose the next few games, we'll get one win and a draw, for example. Season ticket prices go up, which they probably are going to. I just feel like it's going to rub fans up the wrong way. With that combined with that, I just feel like we could be back to where we were before.
Yeah, that's what I posted on socials on Friday when that news had come out about the team and having to pull a kid out of a science class. And I thought, mate, they can't. I imagine now over the weekend or early this week, they post something about seeing ticket prices go up. I think if they can afford to, if they can freeze them. I know we have this conversation every other week, but if they can freeze them, they'll get a little bit more credit in the bank. But then they need to back it up again with a pretty solid, because last year they went up and I think everyone was like, right, yeah, but as long as they back the team and get some transfers in, it'll be sound. And they didn't really do it properly. Obviously, we brought players in, but it was ultimately off the sales of Nunes and Neves. So, yeah, if they can freeze it, I think they'll gain a lot of trust again.
It's an easy win, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Because I still feel like look, the Wolves fans are on board with the manager. It feels like, I know Lopetegui, Wolves fans quite liked him for the job he did, but with how everything went, I think most people think he's a bit of a twat. It feels like for the first time since Nuno, we've got a manager that we kind of buying into, and he gets it, and you know, it's the kind of the same level as Nuno, but it feels like there's a strong bond between the manager, the fans, and the team. But yeah. I still think there's a chasm between Wolves fans and the board and Fosun. And for me, that would be an easy win to for them to try and repair that. They might not give a fuck about repairing it, but they should. And I feel like it could be a bit of an easy win. They'll have to take a hit on it. But the match day revenue is such a small percentage for Wolves compared to other bigger clubs. I feel like it's an easy win for them.
Did you see today, oh, I've not posted on Talking Wolves yet, about the career thing as well? So there's a new ticketing system on a website in Korea, which basically is linked to the Wolves online ticket system. So on this in South Korea, if you're based in South Korea, you can buy a ticket, but then it's like a group where it makes sure wherever you buy tickets is next to other South Koreans at Molineux. So every game, there'll be probably a certain section, I don't know how big or small it is, where you're going to know where other South Koreans are. So I don't know when that's launched or if it's already launched or whatever. But I'll have a look into that a bit more. But I think that's a really, like, if that's obviously the way Wolves have wanted to go. And old school fans probably won't like it. But the fact that, you know, that they know they can make a bit of money out of the, you know, the sort of foreign fans is not too bad.
I think there's a balance to be struck. I feel like, as I'm going to dub them legacy fans for the want of a better term, but as long as you look after your core fan base and your legacy fans, I don't care about this all this other stuff. I think it's great, but it shouldn't compromise the core fan base. Because as we've said many times, mate, we drop into League One again. I don't think anyone's asked about coming home from Korea.
Yeah.
And the only fans will be keeping the club afloat is those core fans. So I think as long as you look after those, then I am more than happy with the thing in Korea. In fact, I think it's shrewd from the club. There's obviously an opportunity there too. And it is really important to grow your fan base abroad, because there's only, you know, Wolverhampton is still a fairly big catchment area for a city. But how many kids grow up in Oxford and think, oh God, I watched Adama Traore as a kid, now I'm a massive Wolves fan. Like, it doesn't really happen unless you're a big successful club. Like, I noticed the other day, I was in the gym and a little lad walked in with a Birmingham accent, he was talking to his dad, and he had a Man City shirt with Haaland on the back. Like, that's come from, you know, I'm assuming, but from success of what the club has done. So it is really important to grow those fan bases abroad, and you know, they are going to want to come to games, and people say, well, how about your loyalty points? But there's still, you know, the stadium's still big enough to house a, you know, a small percentage for those fans. And I've not seen the prices, mate, but I'd imagine they're paying an absolute mint to come and watch.
I've not looked at the full article, but it says that they'll be able to, Korean fans will be able to sit in the stands together for a purchase on the official Wolves app. It will include a ticket to the game, in the special section for Korean fans, entrance to the Wolves Museum, a gift card for the shop, and an international membership. So it'll be probably a good 40, 50 quid more than at least of what a standard ticket is, I'd assume.
Oh, it'll be more than that, mate. It'll be miles more. Because when I work with Spurs, basically you cannot sell a general admission ticket more than what you would sell to normal fan base.
Yeah.
So for you to be able to put a premium on it, you need to wrap it up as hospitality. So like some clubs now, I think United do it, they will sell general admission and hospitality. The hospitality is basically you get a drink in a pub over the road or a social club over the road, genuinely, and they'll charge you £300 for a ticket. When I was working at Spurs, and it's still available now, if people don't believe me, they used to do a thing, because obviously Spurs are very similar to Wolves in terms of having a massive Korean fan base because of Son, and like Spurs is huge. The amount of sales they used to get for this kind of thing, It's called Ticket and Travel. So it is essentially general admission. And what they used to do is just give you a Oyster card for zones 1 to 3, which is
oh my god,
5 or 6 quid potentially. Yeah. And they used to sell tickets for 150, 180 quid. Classed as hospitality, but the market's there, and that's how you have to try and grow your revenue. So for me, it's great, but as long as it's not harming those core fans, then I'm all for it. And to be fair, I'll probably create a fucking better atmosphere than we do.
The atmosphere is good,
mate. Yeah, it sounded good. To be fair,
yeah.
Just on the atmosphere, something's really bugging me, mate.
The chant.
It really is. It really is bugging me because the Mateus Cunha's On My Mind song is fantastic. And I know England have got on for Harry Kane and it's running past the German scoring number 2. And obviously that's the words for Cunha, isn't it? Running past the Albion scoring number 2. It's not scoring past the Albion scoring number 2. It's running past the Albion scoring number 2.
To be fair, on my video that I've put, I only put that video up because obviously my little vlogs that I'm doing, obviously I didn't do one on Saturday, but I have got clips where I've tried to do it. And I thought at like the 80th minute, I was like, oh shit, I've not actually like recording anything. So I did that and I was very drunk and I can hear myself in the background scoring past the Albion. But I think the running will get going again. We'll see on Wednesday.
To be fair, when we had Bruno Lage, I was still singing Nuno Santos Bomb. Nuno Lage's Bomb Army. Bruno Santo. Yeah, it is running past the Albion scoring number 2. I put a tweet out and people saying I've heard this. One sec, I'll grab it now. I've heard dribbling past the Albion, glancing past the Albion,
I saw someone's suggestions for some of what he changed it to, and they were awful, by the way.
Oh, that was owning the Albion after scoring number 2. Wow. He's probably listening to the podcast actually, and I was just like, I think it's sound as it is.
I think we let the Southland carry on with their thing.
I need a bit of work, but you know, I like what you're trying to do. But yeah, that's it's running past the Albion scoring number 2. Because he did score number 2. I've seen people say it's 1 or 2. It's like, no, it's scoring number 2.
Yeah.
I mean, who am I to say what it is? But that's what I think it should be. So therefore, that's what it is. Want to move on to the questions, mate?
Yeah, let's do it.
We have a question from a Mars Music show, which is obviously not a shock or a surprise, but he does ask, you can always count on him to ask a good question. So, or her, you don't know, or they don't know if it's, have you ever met a Mars Music show? Yeah.
I think it's male, but we can,
it's a man actually, Derek. So a Mars, if you don't sell any players in the summer, do you think our players out on loan coming back, e.g. Chiquinho, Mosquera, coupled with a small budget for a couple of additions, will be enough to give us a strong squad with depth, or do we really need to sell a big player? I still think, well, that'll make one big sale at least, don't you?
I think they will, yeah. I still think it depends on your loan players who you're welcoming back. Because Fabio, say no more after yesterday's antics, is probably your
Dave Starboy tripping up over me.
Probably isn't the one. Guedes, would you welcome him back? I know there would be some more percentage.
Would he want
to be
welcome back?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the question you want to ask.
And then out of that, other than that, really, there's money in what I'm saying is there's money there with the loan players. But in terms of bringing them back, Mosquera may come back, but he's been moaning about maybe staying in Spain. Quino could come back. But then other than that, I don't think there's a fat lot of quality.
I've got
out
a name
there.
For you.
There we go.
Keanu Hoover, the redemption arc.
You know what? He's actually got
a good weekend.
Yeah, but defensively, he's awful, mate. He's so bad defensively. But he's popping up with the goals. Maybe Doc version 2.
Doc's gone over 2 years left on his deal, so.
Yeah. I'm not sure. In an ideal world, I think, yeah, Fosun would love that if they can bring in 2 or 3 without having to lose one of the big boys. But I think ultimately for the wheel to keep turning, I think you will eventually see one of 8 Nori, Gomez or Neto go. But they're the obvious ones.
I was on Twitter last night and the Villarreal fans, they love Mosquera. They think he's going to be the next best thing. So, which is positive.
Yeah, it depends what you're selling for, innit, as well.
Was it 4 or 5 million?
Wolves. If that, I think. But the issue is clubs like Villarreal don't have big money to spend on players, so I don't know really.
Haven't they got a keeper that we're linked with?
Yeah, is it Jorgensen or something like that? Jorgensen, yeah. Wolves signed Mosquera for about it's 5 million euros, yeah.
So you're probably looking at 15 million euros, aren't you, really?
15 to 20, I think that's good business for Wolves, really, yeah. So.
Yeah. But Gary O'Neill's hell-bent that he's coming back. So unless because O'Neill wanted to keep him, didn't they?
Yeah, I think O'Neill liked him, but probably knew that he wasn't going to play a huge amount of football. I think the move to Villarreal is very, very good. The level and standard that they managed to get him at, and the fact that he's playing is a very, very good loan. So
yeah. I think Guedes in the summer have a book value of about 17 million with amortization.
I don't think
you get that much for him, yeah.
10 to 15, maybe, tops.
He's going to be on good wages as well.
Villarreal like him and want to keep him. There was a report last week because he's got a good relationship with Marcelino, the manager. But, he'll have to take a big wage cut to move there. I don't know what wage he's on now at Wolves, but, yeah.
He's got to be on upwards of 70, 80 grand a week, hasn't he?
Yeah. I heard as well... Connor Cody at Leicester's on 60 grand a week in Championship.
That's all right, to be fair, because he's not been playing.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was. I watched the game on Saturday versus Albion. Every time he touched the ball, the Albion fans were booing him.
This is. I watched part of the Albion game. This is when I know I was drunk. Actually, woke up a Sunday. Someone, five people have liked your comment. My captain. I've gone on, it's Connor Cody's Instagram post saying the beat Albion. I commented, my captain.
Sorry, I bet he's out texting other birds now. He's leaving He's leaving comments on previous Instagram. Yeah. Oh, fucking hell. I think the Albion fans that like him as well, because when they beat Albion the awful later on in the season, he put an Instagram post saying always good to win this place. He didn't even fucking play. So fair play to him. Once a Wolf, always a Wolf. Next question. Ethan has asked, do you feel as though replacing Saar is needed? I worry that replacing with someone who has better distribution could lead to a keeper with weaker shot stopping. I think as a shot stopper, he's among the best. He's just a middle of the road Premier League goalkeeper who excels in shot stopping. His distribution's wank. We said this before, though, haven't we? There is a lot of links, but it all depends what, in terms of prioritisation from a start of play, how important O'Neill deems the distribution.
Well, have you seen today? He's just signed with a new agency, Jose Sarr, today. So I don't know if that, says anything, but I saw Ramsdale linked again the other day.
That'll go down well.
Yeah, I read the article. I'm sure there was a couple of goalkeepers actually that were linked. I can't remember.
It was Patterson as well at Sunderland, who I've touted on here a couple of times.
Yeah. So, I don't know. There's lads in this group chat. I don't rate their ball knowledge very highly, but they're like adamant we've got to get Ramsdale in. I'm like, but you're just saying like he's not very good with his feet, but it's pretty obvious that the reason we'd change Saar is to get someone good with their feet. So,
He's better than Saar, but I just can't see it being a viable option because of the money they'd want for him.
They paid just under 30, didn't they, for him?
they're going to have to take a hit on him. They're going to get, just because he's been extradited, hasn't he? He's been from the squad.
If you can guarantee now that he would be your first team goalkeeper for the next 5 to 10 years, I think you'd do it because he's only 25. But it's just, he's hot and cold. I think he's like Saar as well. He's got a couple of clangers in him. Very, very picky again. I think Saar should have done better for the second goal on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe in his near post, but
I agree.
So his shot stopping's brilliant, Saar. He's had good games and he's had frustrating games this season, but it's pretty obvious. If you want to, in modern football now, you've got to be, play out from the back, and Saar just can't do that.
Yeah, he's like I said, middle of the road goal. I will be astounded if Wolves go and drop 20, 25 million on a goalkeeper.
Right, especially when there's much more pressure in areas of the field.
Yeah. I would be astounded if they did that. Depends what they get for Sarr. I think they'll still get decent money for Sarr if he goes Saudi.
What do you think, like 15 mil swing?
I think if he goes to Saudi, yeah, 15, 20 mil. But
let's see.
I will. CM914 Instagram has asked favourite Wolves front three: Dico, Fabi Sacco, Jota, Raul, and Adama, Huang, Cunha, Neto. Neto.
In order, probably Raul, Jota, Adama, Dico, Fabi Sacco, and then Huang, Neto, Cunha, bomb.
Agreed. Agreed. He said why.
I was going to say, not so much in terms of quality, because obviously Cunha and Huang and Neto are good, but I think in terms of nostalgia and memories and what they did for the club at that level, I think obviously Adama, Jota and Traore are unbelievable for a couple of years together. Dico, Fabi Sacco, arguably most one of the most iconic front three that we've had. You know, we did very well. I looked at the league table again at that championship season when we went up under Kenny Jack. So we went up from League One to the championship. I can't believe how close it was to us getting the playoffs that year.
Your goal difference.
Yeah, it was on goal difference. And I think it was about 4 or 5 goal swing because we slapped Millwall or something on the last day of the season, if I remember. Oh, good to
tell. That's our season.
Nah, I'm sure it was like some mad result. Like we beat him like, what did you say? 3-0. I think it was more than that. I think it was more than that, you know. What year would that have been? 2015?
Oh, no, you're asking. I'm not sure. Oh, no,
it's 4-2. We beat him in the end.
Oh, yeah. Mine would be the same. Although I love, like, Cunha and Neto and Wang. I just think that the front three of Adama, Raul and Jota on their day was even the top sides couldn't live with them.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, that's and Jota 100 goals in England now.
I saw that. Yeah, nice graphic from Sky Sports.
Absolute bagsman, mate. What a player he was for us. A final question because I really need the toilet. What do you guys think Ferguson's vision for the club long term is? That's from Tommy Turner. Well, Tommy, I don't know if you listened to the last podcast, but we did have Johnny Phillips on. From Sky Sports, and he gave a bit of an insight into that. But despite rumours suggest they're not selling up, they're still looking for external investment. That hasn't changed, and they're very much committed to the club still. So,
if people haven't watched that podcast, even if you skip to maybe like the halfway point, there's loads of good snippets in that podcast from last week. Obviously, the first bit's just talking about the Forest game, but if you go from about half an hour in, there's some really good snippets about the future and stuff. So. Definitely worth a listen if you haven't already.
Absolutely. I think that's a good place to end it, mate. A little shorter one this week, but get it out very sharpish and then before the game on Wednesday. I'll be back next week, next Monday with another pod. But enjoyed it, mate. Where can people find you if they wish to follow you, mate?
It's at David's Party on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok.
Wonderful. We are Talking Wolves across all platforms. If you are new here, please drop us a subscribe. If you've liked the video, make sure you hit that like button. And if you're listening on Apple and Spotify, please leave us a 5-star review if you have enjoyed it. And until next time, hopefully six more points on the board. We're all feeling a little bit happier. And we've all had a fantastic week. But in the meantime, take care and look after yourselves.